Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, Car Show Rolls Over Fentanyl. Community event at Legends Barbershop to raise awareness about harmful drug. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. October is Fentanyl Poisoning Awareness Month, and E.J. Galindo, Junior Guevara, and Michelle Watson are rolling over fentanyl and raising awareness with their car, truck, and bike show. Each year, Guevara hosts a block party at Legends Barbershop to give back to the community. This year, Guevara partnered up with Project 111, a drug and fentanyl awareness program, to raise awareness about the drug. Guevara also partnered with his cousin Galindo, who is a member of the Rollers Only Worldwide Car Club, so that they can organize a car show to bring more people to the event. Our biggest thing is just giving back to the community, Guevara said. We're trying to raise awareness and knowledge so that we can reach the kids. According to the Centers for Disease Control, fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that contributes to nearly 70% of overdose deaths, and the drug is deadly even in small doses. Fentanyl can be pharmaceutical, prescribed by doctors to treat severe pain. However, it can also be illegally made and added to other drugs to make them more powerful, more addictive, and more dangerous. I don't know what form the drug comes in, Guevara said. I don't know what it looks like, but it can be laced in anything. Fentanyl can be found laced in other drugs such as cocaine, ecstasy, heroin, meth, and marijuana, which puts users at a high risk of accidental poisoning or fatal overdose, according to Project 111. Illegally made fentanyl can come in liquid and powder forms. Guevara added that it's important to raise awareness because although a drug may have a certain name, mark, or other identifier, that doesn't mean it is the only thing that drug contains. I want to raise awareness because I have kids, and I know that there's many kids who are dying because of this drug, Galindo said. Project 111 said fentanyl is involved in nearly 70% of Gen Z drug use deaths, which is the highest among all age groups. It's important to reach everyone, especially teenagers, Guevara said. The drug can be anywhere, and teens may give in to peer pressure when their friends tell them to take something. Galindo added that when kids are giving in to peer pressure, they aren't thinking about the possible consequences of their actions. I always tell my kids that there's a consequence to every action, Guevara said. Unfortunately, some kids pay the ultimate consequence, and families are torn apart. He added that a domino effect would occur and that accidental overdose affects families, friends, and entire communities. There's a lot of people that are affected by it, and it's sad to say, but it doesn't really hit until it touches home, Guevara said. Galindo said, it's important to try and help someone who might be battling addiction instead of judging their actions. Guevara added that their goal is to plant the seed in kids' minds so that they fully consider the consequences before they start taking drugs. I think that kids need love, Galindo said. We need to step up as a community and unite to support these kids. Rolling Over Fentanyl includes a car show, vendors, food trucks, a mechanical bull, a tire toss, and more. Galindo and Guevara said the funds raised through the entry fees for vendors and cars will go directly to Project 111. At the end of the day, we are just trying to be a light in the dark, Guevara said. Trucks, cars, and bikes are still being accepted for the show with a $35 entry fee. The car show will feature cash prizes for the first, second, and third place winners. Rolling Over Fentanyl will feature a slam poetry contest between local artists Yazzie Nicole and D-Man. D-Man is a local rapper who will also perform a song that he wrote for fentanyl awareness. The event will take place on Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. at Legends Barbershop, 4310 West Illinois Avenue. This article is entitled CBP Officers Find 20.6 Pounds of Cocaine in SUV Frame, by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. El Paso. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers seized 20.6 pounds of cocaine and a personal amount of methamphetamine at the Presidio Port of Entry. CBP officers working at the Presidio Port remain vigilant in their efforts to stop any contraband that individuals attempt to move through this facility, said Presidio Port Director Benito Reyes Jr. in a press release. This sizable cocaine load did not make it to its intended destination because of our efforts. At about 8:30 a.m. Sunday, a 42-year-old man who was a citizen of Mexico entered the port from Mexico driving a 2014 GMC Acadia. A CBP officer selected the vehicle for a secondary exam, and a drug-sniffing dog alerted that it had found drugs. A physical search resulted in the discovery of 7 cocaine-filled bundles within the vehicle's frame, the release said. Methamphetamine was found after the driver was searched. The driver was turned over to the custody of Homeland Security Investigations. Federal prosecution was accepted. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Basin Sees Record Low Road Fatality Rate in 2023, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Texas Department of Transportation Odessa District has recorded a significant milestone in its efforts to enhance road safety. Our updated fatality rate for the calendar year 2023 has reached an all-time low of 1.98 per 100 million miles traveled, the lowest rate since 2010, and possibly the lowest ever recorded, a TxDOT Odessa District press release said. In 2022, TxDOT Odessa District recorded the fatality rate as 3.01, which was the highest among all of the Texas districts. Since 2012, the Permian Basin has consistently ranked within the top 5 highest fatality rates compared to all other districts. But this year, the Permian Basin District ranks 16th across the state. We continue to address this issue through the 4 E's of traffic safety: engineering, enforcement, education, and engagement, said Odessa District Engineer Eric Likens. TxDOT said the downward trend is a testament to the efforts and partnerships dedicated to making roads safer. However, the ultimate goal of zero fatalities still requires much work to be done. This article is entitled, A Legacy of Service. Oilfield Connections International grows from Cracker Barrel Prayer Group to Global Network, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Oilfield Connections International started with humble beginnings. Sarge Summers, the founder of the Permian Basin chapter, began the organization with a prayer group inside a Cracker Barrel restaurant. Summers has since died. However, the group has carried on. Jose Vargas, the current president of the Midland Odessa chapter, continues to fulfill Summers' vision. A business development manager for Pell State Services, Vargas remembers distinctly how Summers began the group and even accepted an invitation to join the group as well. He would meet up at the Cracker Barrel on Loop 250, and that's where he would house his prayer group meetings, he told the Reporter-Telegram. You know, people would join him for coffee and breakfast and just fellowship together, and that's what it was. It was just a fellowship deal. Now, the organization has more than 22 chapters across the U.S. and South America. He traveled to all these places and started all these chapters, Vargas said. Vargas remembers the day he met Summers and was asked to join his board of directors. I attended one of his events, and we met and hit it off well, he said. He asked me to join the board, and at the time, I was not comfortable with that because I wasn't a godly man. I didn't feel like being two-sided by going to his prayer groups and then continuing to live my life. Eventually, Vargas joined, and 2 years ago became president of the Permian Basin chapter of Oilfield Connections International. The leadership of the fellowship organization places a high value on volunteer service. We believe, as God has blessed us and our business, it is our duty to serve the needs in our communities, the nonprofit says on its website. We participate in fundraisers and community work events to express our love and concerns to our communities. Vargas said a large part of his time as president of the organization is spent volunteering. I volunteer at the Midland Soup Kitchen, he said. We have been helping with trash cleanups. Basically, we go wherever we are needed. Another partnership of the organization is with Midland College for trade school scholarships. Our deal is a 60-40 split, he explained. 60% goes to trade school scholarships, and 40% is split between other local charities. For Oilfield Connections' next event, they plan to meet November 7th at Little Bohemian in Midland. We have a Christmas party coming up, which includes a toy drive, and we are actually fostering 50 families this year, Vargas said. I am looking to place 50 boxes at 50 different locations to try and come up with toys for these families. Additionally, Vargas said the organization has partnered with YMCA in Midland, handing out more than 500 turkey meals this year. Everything we do is for the public, he said. It's free for everybody except for our events. But the events cost only because of our wide variety of connections.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. Woman arrested following death of DPS trooper. An Odessa woman has been charged in connection to the September death of a DPS trooper in Ector County. Laura Lorena Rodriguez was booked into the Ector County Detention Center Tuesday morning following a September 17th incident that killed the trooper and injured an Ector County Sheriff's Department deputy. A news release from Sergeant Stephen Blanco of the Texas DPS detailed Rodriguez, 50, was arrested at her home in Odessa by members of the DPS Texas Highway Patrol State Crash Reconstruction Team on charges stemming from the crash that claimed the life of Trooper Kevin Alexis Ramirez Vasquez. Rodriguez is now charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon against a public servant, a first-degree felony. She was taken into custody without incident and booked into the Ector County Jail. An affidavit shows she was driving 76 miles per hour in a 65 miles per hour zone and was also manipulating her cell phone in the seconds before the crash. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, on the day of the accident, said Vasquez and one of his deputies were injured on Highway 302 near Note Trees. Griffiths said the accident occurred between 8:30 and 9 a.m. in the westbound lanes of Highway 302, just east of No Trees. The deputy was assisting DPS with traffic control following an accident. Griffiths said his deputy is recovered and back at work. Vasquez was initially transported to Medical Center Hospital, but was later airlifted to a Lubbock area hospital where he later died. Tuesday's news release detailed Vasquez, 25, was outside his vehicle investigating an earlier traffic crash along that road with Ector County Sheriff's Office Deputy Justin Toombs, who was inside his patrol unit. Rodriguez's vehicle hit Toombs's patrol vehicle, which struck Vasquez. Deputy Toombs was injured in the crash. Trooper Ramirez Vasquez suffered severe injuries and was taken to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. He was then airlifted to a Lubbock area hospital where he succumbed to his injuries on September 28th. This is still an active case, and no additional information is available at this time, Blanco stated in the release. The news release also reminded drivers of the state's Move Over or Slow Down law, which requires drivers to move over and put a lane between them and emergency personnel on the side of the road or reduce their speed to 20 miles per hour below the posted speed limit when passing law enforcement, first responders, tow trucks, utility vehicles, and TxDOT vehicles stopped with emergency lights activated. Violators face fines of up to $1,250 for a first offense, and there are stricter penalties for drivers who cause serious injuries, including possible jail time and fines up to $4,000. Vasquez was honored when hundreds gathered at Community of Faith Church in Hockley on October 3rd to pay their respects to Vasquez. His parents and three siblings were surrounded by family and friends as they said their goodbyes to the young trooper who joined DPS in 2023. Texas First Lady Cecilia Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick both attended the services. They were joined by Public Safety Commission Chairman Stephen Mock and Commissioners Dan Hoard III and Larry Long. Throughout his young life, Texas Highway Patrol Trooper Kevin Alexis Ramirez Vasquez served his state and his country with incredible honor and dignity, said DPS Director Stephen McCraw. Each of us in this department are fortunate to have served alongside him, and every day we will now work to ensure his memory lives on. We are incredibly grateful for the support we've received since his passing, and I ask that you please continue to keep his family, friends, and colleagues in your prayers. Vasquez began his law enforcement career when he joined DPS as a member of Recruit Class 8, 2023. He was stationed in Odessa. Trooper Ramirez Vasquez lived a life of service, serving in the United States Army prior to joining the department and serving in the National Guard. Trooper Ramirez Vasquez is the 241st DPS officer to die in the line of duty since 1823. Special Recognition. Volunteers honored at this year's Beacon Awards by Michael Bewer. The Nonprofit Management Center held its annual Beacon Awards Tuesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Different awards were given out to volunteers and nonprofit organizations from around the Permian Basin. As always, we are excited to have so many recipients, Board Chair Amy Hendricks said. We are excited that so many people took the time to nominate because without organizations and people nominating for the awards, we wouldn't have any recipients. So we are excited about that. The awards included the Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer of the Year, the W.D. Noel Volunteer of the Year Award, which both included an adult and youth category, Excellence in Collaboration, Excellence in Communication, Program Excellence, Excellence in Organizational Leadership, Excellence in Governing Board Leadership, Outstanding Generations Graduate, and the Lori L. Johnson Lighthouse Legacy Award. This was the first year that the Lori L. Johnson Lighthouse Legacy Award was given out. This is the year that our former executive director, Lori Johnson, retired, Hendricks said. In her honor, we have established the Lori L. Johnson Lighthouse Legacy Award. That's an award given in recognition of someone who has a significant amount of contributions to a nonprofit and to communities. Not just to non-profit, that is not an award that we anticipate giving every single year. This is going to be truly representing someone who is leaving a legacy. Aaron Gomez was named the Adult W.D. Noel Volunteer of the Year for his work with the American Red Cross. I think it's a great honor to be nominated by my organization as well as winning the nomination from the Nonprofit Management Center, Gomez said. It's a great organization that supports nonprofit organizations in the community. It's great to be winning this honor. Gomez, who has been volunteering for the American Red Cross for over a decade, talked about how emotional he was when he learned about his award. I kind of teared up a little bit because I've been volunteering with the organization for more than 12 years, Gomez said. I've always had a heart to volunteer. I encourage people to volunteer as well because even just 1 hour can make a difference. The Midland High football team was honored as the Youth Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteers of the Year. What a tremendous honor, and it's a testament to our kids and that they have a heart to serve and a heart to give back to the community, Midland High head coach Thad Fortune said. We also have a lot of support in our community with our booster club and different people that nominated us. We've never started doing community services just to be invited to luncheons or award ceremonies, but it's nice to be recognized. This is something our program is built on, with trying to make our community better. Liz Cole of the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center was awarded the Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer of the Year Award in the adult category. The Youth W.D. Noel Volunteer of the Year Award went to Shiloh Weiss of Meals on Wheels of Odessa. The Excellence in Collaboration went to Sound the Alarm from Meals on Wheels of Odessa and American Red Cross. It is such an honor to be highlighted amongst peers, Executive Director of Meals on Wheels of Odessa, Craig Stoker, said. This is a room full of people that I work with in and day out. I have taken so much advice from them and learned my craft from them. To be honored by that group is truly an honor. To be recognized for collaboration is very special because I feel that as a small nonprofit, we have to work together to best serve our clients. The fact that we have provided over 300 smoke alarms to clients at Meals on Wheels is incredible. To have a youth volunteer at Meals on Wheels be honored is incredible. It's hard to bring the meals to our clients, and to have one of our youth volunteers honored is special. The Excellence in Communication went to First Fridays of Downtown Odessa and Odessa Arts, while the Program Excellence Award went to the Share Family Support Program. Excellence in Organizational Leadership went to Chelsea Rogers of High Sky Children's Ranch, while the Excellence in Governing Board Leadership went to Bernadette Ostroff of the APS Advisory Board of the Permian Basin. Outstanding Generation Graduate went to Misty Clary, while Lori Johnson was the recipient of the Lighthouse Award. We do have judges, and each award has a different set of judges, Hendrick said. With that, the judges look over the presentations and the nominations and score them and send them back to us. It is a challenge every single year, and the judges are so impressed with all the individuals and the organizations that have been presented. Compass Going for Sports Complex. Compass Academy Charter School is looking to add to its footprint with a sports complex. The project has been in the works for about a year. Last year, Superintendent Jason Inman said they created the Compass Academy Education Foundation, which is its fundraising capital campaign nonprofit. Once they raise the funds for the sports complex, the foundation will be used for other needs as the school grows. Inman said they want to give the students facilities to participate in sports along with offering the sports themselves. They are looking at trying to raise between $30 and $40 million for everything they want. That's including a football stadium with track, baseball, and softball fields, a field house with competition, volleyball and basketball gymnasiums, tennis courts, Inman said. Compass is in 3A for football. They are in a district with Crane, Alpine, and Anthony this year. For volleyball and basketball, Compass is in district with Brownfield, La Mesa, and Denver City. They are starting baseball and softball this year. Our coaching staff has really grown this year, and we are continuing to look to help flesh that out. There was a time we had only two coaches on football, and that's really difficult to do. We've grown that staff, and that's allowed us to be in a position to add those extra sports, the baseball and softball. Our cross-country team just swept district, boys and girls, JV, and everybody. The varsity teams are both advancing. Volleyball is in a real good position to make a deep run into the playoffs. Football will make the playoffs. We are currently second in district. The golf team is really getting after it. Tennis is playing. All our sports are really excelling right now. Our band has started competing in some of the marching contests in the area. They went to Portales, New Mexico, a few weeks ago and made a really good showing over there. So we are really excited about all of our extracurricular programs, Inman said. They play some of their games at Astound Broadband Stadium and some at Ratliff Stadium. Their availability can be a challenge sometimes because their schedules take precedence over what we have going on, Inman said. Having a sports complex will, logistically, make life a lot easier for students. It will help grow our programs, and it'll be great for the kids. That's one of the reasons the football stadium is such a big push. It's not just about football. It's about the track program. It's about the golf program. It's about the band program. All those kids that are in those different areas can all use the same facility for different things. That's why it's our number one priority. It's not just because it's about football. It's about all the different programs that can use that facility, Inman said. Compass has 1,496 students in grades kindergarten through 12. Their waiting list has 850 students. Inman said many of those students are involved in extracurricular activities. There's very few kids that aren't in some program, he added. The high school enrollment is 406 at this point, from 9 through 12, and I think almost every one of those kids is in one of those programs. Our high school band alone has over 70 members. That's just marching band. That doesn't count all the underclassmen that are 5th grade up through 12th grade. All those kids can take band and choir and orchestra, so pretty much everybody is involved. Compass has about $3 million earmarked for seed money from its last bond borrow for the complex. When we added the new portables to the east, we took out a bond and purchased some land and then paid for the portables. And we set a little bit of that money back to kind of the start the funding of the sports facilities, Inman said. He added that they would prefer getting outside donations for the sports complex. We would rather not accrue any more debt at this point, Inman said. They are working on a master plan for the complex, and once they have that, they can show donors and present what they want to build. The complex will be on 25 acres between Compass and Crossroads Fellowship Church. Inman said they have always had tremendous parent support. Newton Engineering is doing the design phase. They hope to have the plans ready by December. It's hard to ask for money when you don't really have a map of what you want. We know where we want to put everything, but we kind of want a more formalized look at what the facility would look like before we take it out and say, hey, we want you to build us a football field, Inman said. For academic buildings, they would like to build a brick-and-mortar high school. The four big new portables that are east of the campus currently house 7th through 12th graders. The buildings have 40 classrooms. They're pretty well-built buildings. They're pretty solid, and I think they'll be serviceable for quite a while, Inman said. There is a long line of portables to the south of the campus that came over with them from the Pagewood Avenue location. Compass is now at 5530 Billy Hext Road. $8 million inland port deal tabled by ODC Monday. The Odessa Development Corporation on Monday met and tabled a deal that the Odessa City Council already had on their Tuesday agenda to approve. The deal was to purchase property at 3215 West Murphy Street for an inland port that will be operated by Permian Basin Inland Port. The agreement calls for the city to purchase the land for nearly $8.3 million and to put almost $1 million into escrow as a refundable earnest money deposit. That is now on hold as ODC board member Melanie Holman made a motion to table the issue pending several items, including asking Tom Mansky, Executive Director of Economic Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, to connect with ODC attorney Jeff Moore to deal directly with the bankruptcy trustee who is selling the land. She also called for an appraisal of the property and for Mansky to connect with Moore for red line changes to their agreement, including earnest money deposit and its refundability. She said a feasibility period length needs to be addressed, as well as the need for a survey, appraisal, and the appropriate environmental review. Holman's notion included coming back to the issue during the ODC November meeting. The deal has been a couple of years in the making. In July 2022, Mayor Javier Joven spent a couple of days south of New Orleans visiting with people at the Plaque Mines, Port Harbor, and Terminal District and businessmen who hoped to one day create a direct transportation line between the port and Odessa. Joven said at the time two of the principals had ties to Odessa and they were in talks about building a rail facility and connecting up with existing Union Pacific Railways. The principals liked that Odessa is already familiar with oil, gas, and chemicals, Joven said. On March 28, 2023, council members heard a presentation from Taylor Rich of Citilogs, a company that works with industrial rail shippers and commercial developers to design, build, and operate rail-served industrial parks and ports. Rich and one of his clients, Roger King from Pipeline Innovation, spoke about the lack of rail service in the Permian Basin and the need for an inland port. King said smaller companies have a demand for rail service and an inland port would be an opportunity to level the playing field for smaller companies. On June 13th, the ODC signed a Memorandum of Understanding with Permian Basin Inland Port to assist and provide support for the development of the port. Texas Secretary of State records show a Roger King is the registered agent for Permian Basin Inland Port, and campaign finance records show a Roger King donated $1,500 to Hovind's re-election campaign. Hovind is facing Odessa attorney Cal Hendrick in the mayor's race. Early voting started Monday. Quick hits. Early voting. Early voting continues in the presidential election. Early voting in Ector County. There are 5 early voting locations, including the 8th Street County Annex, UTPB's D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center, Kellis Turner Park, Odessa College Sports Center, and Salinas Park. Location hours vary by day. Please visit the Ector County Elections page for more information. Those who live in the city of Odessa but in Midland County may vote at the Odessa Country Club. A number of local races are also on the ballot. Eddie Mitchell will challenge current District 1 City Councilperson Mark Mata in November's election. Meals on Wheels Executive Director Craig Stoker is challenging incumbent Denise Swanner for the Odessa City Council at-large seat. Odessa Attorney Cal Hendrick is challenging Mayor Javier Hovind. District 2 will feature incumbent Steve Thompson against Nayeli Urias. The races are nonpartisan and are for 4-year terms. Early voting ends November 1st. November 5th is Election Day. OC's Bond. Voters in Ector County will decide the fate of a $355 million bond election for Odessa College, which will raise property taxes. If approved, funds would be used for a new sports center, career and technical education building, repurposing the Jack Rogers Fine Arts Center as a child care center, infrastructure, and for the downtown campus. Shem Culpepper, president/CEO of First Basin Credit Union, led a committee made up of community members to look at OC needs. Culpepper said on a 334,000 home, it would be about $30 per month or $360 a year more in property taxes over what homeowners are already paying. MCH ballot. Also on this year's ballot is Ector County Hospital District Election Proposition A. The prop, in a nutshell, is the first step in allowing the hospital district the ability to raise their tax rate, not to exceed 75 cents per 100 valuation, to essentially allow what supporters say will be a fair and equitable distribution of the costs for fire and EMS services for all city and county residents. Supporters say the measure will improve fire and EMS services for both city and county residents. City residents will get a tax reduction while county residents will gain improved fire and EMS services through increased funding. Currently, the city has the responsibility to provide fire and EMS services, and this vote, if approved, will shift that cost to the hospital district, but the city will continue to manage the fire and EMS services. STEM students to send notes of hope to hurricane victims. Students in Pauline Williamson's 9th grade world geography class at STEM Academy are learning to put themselves in the place of people impacted by Hurricanes Helene and Milton by having them pen hope notes of hope. Williamson has friends in North Carolina that have been affected and has received social media posts from them with photos of the destruction and stories of aid and comfort. On a recent Friday, one of her classes was looking at photos and writing notes. The evening before, the school had a community fair where some of the students had written notes of hope and joy. We've taken a look at a lot of the pictures of the devastation for Hurricane Helene in western North Carolina especially, and I've asked you to put yourself in their place. I ask you, what would you feel like if you were there? What would you feel like? What would you be worried about? She said, I don't know what you guys have gone through. My suspicion is that a few of you guys have gone through some difficult things. Maybe some of the things where you felt like your world was falling apart, or you felt alone, or you felt like you didn't know what was going to happen next. Part of what I wanted to do with these notes of hope, I want them to know that we are thinking about them, we care about them, and they are present in our thoughts, and they're connected to us. They are not alone, Williamson added. She said that she has made contact with several of her friends in the area who have churches and places that are feeding 1,000 people a day. Think about something that would make you laugh or smile, because when you've gone through really horrible things, you want something that you can pull out and look at. and it reminds you that somebody cares about you. It reminds you to smile sometimes. Actually having something tangible to hold on to can make a ton of difference, Williamson said. Students can identify with tragedy because of the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting. 7 people were killed and 25 injured. The shooter, Seth Autor, was shot and killed by multiple law enforcement agencies as they made a final stand in a field near Synergy Theater. World Geography covers hurricanes, weather events, and how they affect cultures and people. She also teaches government to seniors. A couple of years ago, there were really big storms and flooding in Pakistan that we did things on. But with these people, I think, for our kids, it's almost easier for them to relate to people that are in America, Williamson said. Williamson stated that the 3 world geography classes, and there may be elementary students participating as well. I kind of figure however many notes we put together, there will be more people that might need one, and so I would love to get more donations of notes that could be sent out as well, she added. She's going to try to send the notes out before Thanksgiving, but some may go out sooner. The notes will go to Western North Carolina and North Georgia. Everyone comes at the notes from different perspectives, but she's told students to steer clear of toxic positivity, like, you'll get over this, or everything is going to be all right. There will always be disaster and fear and hard hits in the world, but if you can do the generative work of helping people heal, of trying to build community so that there is some kind of safety net when disaster does strike, that's what we do. We do it for other people, and then part of it is the hope that they would do the same for us. But really, it's just the right thing to do, Williamson said. Cooper Holman, a 14-year-old ninth grader, said he thinks notes of hope are a really great idea. We've had floods before and where it only floods out a few roads, but over there the entire place has been covered with water. It has said to be like trillions of gallons of water overtaking the entire area, Holman said. UTPB hosting Halloween Conference. University of Texas Permian Basin Halloween Conference 2024 is set from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 31st in the library event space on campus. With a theme of ghosts, it includes presentations on short stories, the paranormal, poetry, and popular media, and the supernatural, to name a few. Presenters come from UTPB, Odessa College, Italy, and the United Kingdom. A panel discussion titled Popular Media and the Supernatural will include presenters from Midland College. There will be refreshments. Past themes have included zombies, vampires, doppelgangers, and werewolves, senior lecturer Jennifer Paxton said. They are basically seasonally appropriate themes. The idea is because a lot of people think academic equals boring, and it really is not. Certainly history is my field, and you can study the history of literally anything. There are historians who use comic books as their sources to look at pop culture. Anything and everything that interests anyone has a history, and looking at the history and literature, the psychology of these topics can be really interesting. You can learn some really interesting things. It's a worthwhile field of study, but it's also just fun. It's a good event, I think, Paxton said. The 5th annual event is meant to be fun, but also show that scholarly research and thinking about things in a scholarly way can be fun. UTPB didn't have one last year. I'm presenting. I'm doing one about the Fox sisters, who in the mid-1800s basically kicked off spiritualism. It started with a prank that they were playing on their parents, where they were making these knocking sounds, and their parents were saying, oh, this is so spooky. They thought they were ghosts, and the sisters just went with it, Paxton said. The oldest sister realized that there was a lot of potential in this, so she kind of took the helm and they made it this whole huge thing of performance on stage, Paxton said. The sisters created the stereotypical haunting with knocking, things moving and objects being thrown at people. She added that it's kind of like the things shown on ghost hunting shows. They kind of shaped that, and they also set up the classic communicating with ghosts, but science kind of methodology. They would ask questions and they would get raps and response, she said. This is the first year that Paxton has headed up the Halloween conference effort. I'm glad that it's going to make, that we're going to have enough proposals to actually get it off the ground. Ideally, it'll get bigger next year, Paxton said. She would encourage everyone to check out the event. It's just a come and go. Come and get a couple cookies and listen to what you want and then go about your day. It should be fun and it should be pretty accessible too. It's not intended only for rarefied scholars, Paxton said. Death notices. Paul Revere Gunn, A cherished father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and friend passed away peacefully at his reference in Odessa, Texas, on October 18, 2024, at the age of 98. Born on October 12, 1926, in Crosscut, Texas, Paul lived a life marked by love, creativity, and a profound sense of spirituality. In honor of Paul's remarkable life, his family will gather in a private ceremony to remember and cherish the man who brought so much light into their lives. Paul's story is one of enduring love, creative passion, and a deep commitment to his faith and family. He will be remembered as a beacon of love and strength, and his spirit will continue to inspire those he has left behind. A graveside service for Paul will begin 3 p.m. Thursday, October 24th at Crosscut Cemetery. Bobby Manning, age 73, a local rancher of Gatesville, passed away peacefully at his home on Thursday, October 17, 2024. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 24th at Scott's Funeral Home Chapel in Gatesville. Interment will follow at Restland Cemetery in Gatesville. Scott's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. For full obituary details may be found at www.scottfh.com. Clyde James Jim Marler, age 77, passed away on October 19, 2024, at his home in Kermit, Texas. He was born on January 18, 1947, in Sweetwater, Texas, to Clyde M. and Ethel Pauline Mallow Marler. Clyde married Janet Reed on August 5, 1967, in Monahans, Texas, and they shared 57 wonderful years together. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 25th, at First Baptist Church in Kermit, Texas, officiated by Dudley Mullins. In lieu of flowers, a memorial donation may be made to First Baptist Church of Kermit, 400 East Bryan Kermit, Texas, 79745. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Service Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family. Leland Duane Walker Sr. The year 1956 was known for very important reasons: the mega hit Heartbreak Hotel and the birth of Leland Duane Walker. Memorial celebration of life for Leland Walker will be held at Ward County Event Center on Sunday, October 27th. At 1 p.m., family, food, and friends sharing memories. 1525 East Monahans Parkway, Monahans, Texas, 79756. Ralph William Lewis, 71, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 29, 2024, in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m., October 25, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor John Hendricks is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Pamela Jane Maffrey, 76, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 17, 2024, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. October 26, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Rodney Mann, 60, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 20th, 2024, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., October 24th, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery in Merkle, Texas, at 2 p.m. Pastor Vonnie Taylor is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Ruby Jane McGoo Oates, 83, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 20th, 2024, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 21st. Odessa Fire Rescue's Rios resumes duties as captain. The story was written by Kim Smith. The Odessa Fire Rescue Captain, who was demoted to Lieutenant 3 months ago after allowing a nude photo shoot at Station Number 2, has resumed his duties as Captain. OFR Chief Jason Cotton objected to the use of the word promoted to describe Orlando Rios' ascension up the ladder. Quote, "Well, it's not necessarily a promotion. It was a reinstatement, and the decision was made because he is a 19-year employee with a clean record, and as the director of Odessa Fire Rescue and the chief, I feel like I know what's best and what's going to be best for our department, and I think that was what was best," Cotton said. Cotton said it was always understood that Rios was demoted for a specific time frame, and as long as no other infractions took place within that time frame, he could resume his role as captain. However, Rios's order of discipline, signed July 16th, makes no mention of the demotion being temporary. It stated the demotion was to become effective after the 10 days of unpaid leave he was also given. It also stated he would not be allowed to work overtime from July 16th through September 28th. According to texts received by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, the woman involved in the photo shoot reached out to Rios November 2, 2023, asking about the possibility of using a fire truck in a photo shoot, and he immediately responded he didn't see an issue with it. They then discussed the possibility of her wearing a firefighter's jacket during the shoot and the need to remove any names from the jacket. Rios also informed her the Odessa Fire logo or anything Odessa-related could not be in the picture, and she agreed, the text showed. Quote, "It would have been no more than 20 to 30 minutes, depending on the day. Weekends are best for our shift and free time," he wrote. The text turned flirty on the day of the photo shoot, November 25th, with Rios thanking her for making his day and joking about his mustache. When she says she's a sucker for beards and stashes, he responded by saying, "Well, I'm single, so when you want to just have a little fun, hit me up," end quote. In two of the redacted photos obtained by the Odessa American, the woman is topless, wearing firefighter turnout pants, and standing in front of and beside a fire engine. In a third photo, she is laying nude on the bumper of a fire engine with a number 2 on it and a Texas license plate. Records show that when Cotton entered an order of discipline, he stated Rios violated OFR policies pertaining to conduct and behavior. According to OFR policies, members must strive to attain the highest professional standard of conduct and behave at all times in a manner that reflects favorably on the department. They should also be courteous and respectful to other members of the department, refrain from engaging in sexual activity while on duty, and refrain from abusing their positions for personal gain. In addition, members aren't to use or authorize the use of city equipment, property, supplies, or employees' services for other than official city business. Nor should they engage in nonverbal sexual harassment by distributing, displaying, or discussing any written or graphic materials that are sexually suggestive. Quote, "Our professionalism and the reputation of the city of Odessa and Odessa Fire Rescue are paramount to the success of our employees, our mission, and our oath-taken responsibility," Cotton wrote in the order of discipline. Quote, "As an officer for OFR, the expectations are even higher. You are expected to lead, mentor, and provide for the employees in your charge. Your decisions become lessons that others learn just by watching you make them. The decisions that led to the above policy violations are an opportunity for you to learn from as well, end quote. Cotton noted back in July that Rios had never been disciplined in the 19 years he's worked for the department, and he's always met or exceeded expectations when evaluated. Cotton said OFR believes in second chances and, quote, your contrite heart was obvious during this discussion that included your love of your career, your co-workers, the department, and the city of Odessa, end quote. City may spend more than $8 million on inland port land. The story was written by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council has a particularly busy agenda Tuesday. They'll discuss buying land for an inland port, a bathroom ordinance, the controversial TGAA contract, salaries, the sports complex, and the future of Equipment Services Director Chris Adams. During the council's regular 6 p.m. meeting, the council will be asked to bless an agreement the Odessa Development Corporation was to make October 16th to purchase property at 3215 West Murphy Street for an inland port that will be operated by Permian Basin Inland Port. The October 16th meeting was later rescheduled to October 21st. The agreement calls for the city to purchase the land for nearly $8.3 million and to put almost $1 million into escrow as a refundable earnest money deposit. The deal has been a couple of years in the making. In July 2022, Mayor Javier Hoven spent a couple of days south of New Orleans visiting with people at the Plaquemines Port Harbor and Terminal District and businessmen who hoped to one day create a direct transportation line between the port and Odessa. Hoven said at the time two of the principals had ties to Odessa and they were in talks about building a rail facility and connecting up with existing Union Pacific railways. The principals liked that Odessa is already familiar with oil, gas, and chemicals, Hoven said. Quote, it would be like, oh my God, we can bring in all these costs, get chemicals. They're already here. There's not a lot of re-education. There's not a lot of danger to the community. There's no more than we already are dealing with on a daily basis, Hoven said at the time. On March 28, 2023, council members heard a presentation from Taylor Rich of SiteLog X, a company that works with industrial rail shippers and commercial developers to design, build, and operate rail-served industrial parks and ports. Rich and one of his clients, Roger King from Pipeline Innovation, spoke about the lack of rail service in the Permian Basin and the need for an inland port. King said smaller companies have a demand for rail service and an inland port would be an opportunity to level the playing field for smaller companies. On June 13th, the ODC signed a Memorandum of Understanding with Permian Basin Inland Port to assist and provide support for the development of the port. Texas Secretary of State records show a Roger King is the registered agent for Permian Basin Inland Port, and campaign finance records show a Roger King donated $1,500 to Hoven's re-election campaign. Hoven is facing Odessa attorney Cal Hendrick. Early voting started Monday. TGAA. The council is also scheduled to discuss City Manager John Beckmeyer's signing of an interlocal governmental agreement with the Texas Government Accountability Association, a nonprofit group that has promised to help the city in its efforts to be transparent and ethical by creating policies and procedures. The open-ended agreement of $24,000 a year for years 2 through 5 and can increase at that time. In addition, it can only be ended if it's placed on a ballot and residents vote to do so. City Councilman Steve Thompson asked for the agreement to be placed on the agenda because he has questions as to when the contract was negotiated and the legality of the agreement, because TGAA isn't a governmental agency. Thompson and Councilman Gilbert Vasquez have also expressed concerns that Beckmeyer's longtime friend, Matt Armstrong, brought the group to the council, and Armstrong is running Hoven and Councilmembers Denise Swanner and Mark Mata's re-election campaigns. Beckmeyer, Swanner, Hoven, and Mata did not sign conflict of interest forms. TGAA insists Armstrong doesn't work for them, and the city indicated there are no records showing Armstrong as a contract or employee agreement with Beckmeyer or the city. The council is also scheduled to discuss amending the city's 1989 ordinance regarding the entering of city-owned restrooms by members of the opposite sex. According to the city agenda, quote, "It is deemed to be in the best interest of city residents to amend the code, quote, to limit the use of these additional facilities and city-owned buildings based on an individual's birth sex in order to maintain privacy and safety in public restrooms, changing rooms, and locker rooms." Adams. According to the council's agenda, city council members are also scheduled to go into executive session to discuss, quote, "the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of Adams, who was hired by the city in June 2023. Since he was hired, Adams convinced the city council to create its own tire shop and to purchase fuel equipment so city employees can fuel city-owned vehicles. Both measures, he said, would save the city money. Adams has also been named in a lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court against the city by Southern Tire Mart, which alleges Adams has hostile feelings toward the company, and as a result, the city has intentionally violated Texas law by purchasing tires from a competitor for the last year. The lawsuit alleges Adams falsely claimed STM double-billed the city by more than $180,000 and did not retract that statement despite being shown documents disproving it. Ector County Commissioner Don Stringer also emailed Beckmeyer back in August that Adams was using a city-owned vehicle to drive back and forth to his home in Lubbock, thus violating a city policy. Emails obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act show Beckmeyer told Adams to stop using the vehicle to commute. Water. Also during Tuesday's regular session, Interim Utilities Director Alex Rowlett is scheduled to ask the council if he can submit an application for a state-funded loan program through the Texas Water Development Board. The funds would be for the construction and design of a proposed water tower on the northeast side of the city. He also plans to ask if he can move $350,000 from the Pioneer Fund, which is comprised of mineral rights sales money, to the Darrington Wastewater Treatment Plant to help improve day-to-day functions so that the plant will be able to continuously operate. Finance Director Kaylee Banda is also on Tuesday's agenda. She'll be asking for $3 million for various positions not included in next year's budget. The positions are in various departments throughout the city, including Equipment Services, the City Manager's Office, IT, Solid Waste, Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, Community Development, Solid Waste, Wastewater, and Billing and Collections. During the city's 3 p.m. work session meeting, the City Council will discuss going out for bids on waste and water projects because Edgardo Madrid and Associates has opted not to extend its contract with the city for the second time. According to materials provided to the council, the company was awarded a three-year, $3.8 million contract in November 2020, with the option to extend it twice. Since January 2021, the company has worked on water and wastewater line replacements, fire hydrant replacements, and emergency water line breaks under the supervision of the city's utility department. According to Rowlett, their contract is ending December 31st, and they don't want to extend it. As a result, they need to find another company to take on their jobs. Quote, "This RFP is important and crucial to the day-to-day function of our water and wastewater infrastructure, as we currently do not have enough personnel to perform these services," Rowlett wrote. The council will also hear some more from Gallagher Human Resources, which was hired to determine how the city compares to other cities, make recommendations on salaries, and how to implement any changes. According to materials provided to the council, Gallagher has determined the city's base salaries are below the market at the 50th percentile and possibly misaligned with the market at the 75th percentile. The materials show Gallagher has offered two options to the city, one that would cost $3.4 million and another that would cost roughly $6.8 million. The latter would mean the city would be among the top quarter of comparable employers. Beckmeyer is also expected to update the council on the pre-development agreement with SportsMed Properties for the new sports complex. Teenager shot to death early Sunday. The Ector County Sheriff's Office is investigating a shooting that took the life of a teenager early Sunday morning. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said ECSO received a shots-fired call around 1:20 a.m. from the 6700 block of Cayley, and when deputies arrived, they learned Edgar Rubio, age 18, had been taken to Medical Center Hospital with a gunshot wound. Rubio died of his injuries upon arrival at the hospital. Griffiths said the incident is being investigated as a homicide, and anyone with information is asked to contact the sheriff's office. Griffiths Fawcett called for civility at the polls. The story was written by Laura Dennis. With early voting starting Monday, some of the highest-ranking elected officials in Odessa held a Friday news conference calling for civility at the polls and indicating they hoped the event would be preventative with a highly charged national and local election underway. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett, Sheriff Mike Griffiths, and County Commissioners Mike Gardner and Billy Hall held the news conference at the county annex. The call for civility was partly due to local GOP political tensions during the March primary, where two candidates accused the other of assault during early voting at the county annex. Neither candidate faced charges, as the cases were rejected for insufficient evidence. An Odessa Police Department report details officers were dispatched to a disturbance at the annex on February 22nd. GOP Precinct 203 Chair candidate Carmen Wilhite and GOP County Chair candidate Donna Kelm were at the annex trying to gain support during early voting. According to the report, Kelm claimed she gently touched Wilhite's arm to ask her not to falsely claim she was a Democrat, and Wilhite, age 62, responded by flinging her arm back and grabbing her by the back of her hair. She later sought medical treatment. Wilhite, however, told police Kelm aggressively grabbed her arm, causing her to throw her arm back to get Kelm to stop touching her, the report stated. The only witness listed in the police report, Linda Hall, corroborated Kelm's version of the event. Hall stated, "Donna did not appear to be threatening or aggressive toward Carmen." Kelm went on to defeat Tisha Crowe by a vote of 4,954 to 3,775, and Wilhite lost to Ronnie Lewis by a vote of 644 to 233. Fawcett and Griffiths on Friday said the news conference was called to let voters and candidates know there will be zero tolerance for misbehavior at the polls, and that Odessa Police Department and the Ector County Sheriff's Office are stepping up security at all the polling places during early voting and on Election Day. Quote, "This is an important election. Every next election is always going to be the most important election that we see. And so we had a meeting, Sheriff Griffiths and Odessa Police Department Chief Mike Gerke, and we discussed how we ensure folks coming to polling locations feel secure and safe," Fawcett said. There are five early voting locations, including the Annex, UTPB's D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center, Kellis Turner Park, Odessa College's Sports Center, and Salinas Park. Locations are open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and both Griffiths and Fawcett encouraged early voting to avoid Election Day lines. Those who live in the city of Odessa, but in Midland County, may vote at the Odessa Country Club. Fawcett said boundaries will be clearly marked so those campaigning will be aware of where they can and cannot go. Griffiths said it will be closely monitored. Any voter who feels harassed may report it to election judges at each polling place. Griffiths indicated extra personnel will be on hand during early voting and Election Day. He said he won't tolerate misbehavior. Quote, "No fussing, fighting, harassing. Just stand in line and mind your business and vote," he added. He also said he believes everyone already knows who they are voting for, and there is no need to harass voters at this late date. Quote, "Act civil. Act like you love your neighbor, even though you may not vote the same way," Griffiths said. Both Griffiths and Fawcett indicated the national atmosphere is volatile, but so is the local rhetoric. Fawcett bemoaned the low voter turnout in Ector County and said they don't want local voters to have a reason not to go and vote. When asked about the particularly hateful local rhetoric on sites like the Odessa Accountability page on Facebook, Fawcett said, quote, "Let's talk about the future of Odessa and what we want to bring. Let's talk about policies and avoid talking about personalities," end quote. Griffiths said he worries more about in-person altercations than social media. Both agreed freedom of speech is important, but indicated the hate speech surrounding some local races is troubling. Fawcett said recent debates have been mostly congenial and hopes candidates will temper elevated emotions. Both called for civility and calm. Odessa GOP Precinct Chair Ronnie Lewis attended the conference, saying he wasn't afraid to talk about the elephant in the room, which is that good local candidates are hard to find when there is so much hate directed at them from social media, particularly from Odessa's Accountability Project. Lewis helped Kelm lead the charge that changed the makeup of the local GOP precinct chair group in March. Lewis went on to call out several elected officials for not standing up against what he called hate from the OAP Facebook. Mayor Javier Hoven, facing Cal Hendrick in the election, and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata. Swanner faces Craig Stoker, while Mata faces Eddie Mitchell. Lewis said all three are guilty of not campaigning in an above-board manner and not calling on the hate sites and pages to stop attacking local churches and candidates. Commissioner Gardner said he knows a lot of people who won't interact with that page because of the attacks. Quote, Mayor Hoven, Denise Swanner, and Mark Mata have never condemned those Facebook profiles, not once, Lewis said. He said Swanner went so far as to say she was also a victim of online attacks during a debate this week. But Lewis went on to say it is her opponent, Craig Stoker, who has been attacked. He also called out Hoven for claiming during a debate that he didn't know who was behind the Save Odessa PAC when he is listed as a follower of their Facebook page. Other election matters. Odessa Chamber of Commerce CEO and President Renee Earls on Friday said she has called on the local person listed on the We Love Odessa PAC to stop using a logo that looks very similar to the Chamber's longtime logo. Quote, I've been contacted a few times this week questioning the use of our Chamber logo or partial logo on a current Political Action Committee website and printed material. Our Chamber has no connection to this PAC. Our Chamber bylaws prohibit our organization to endorse any political candidates as we are nonpartisan, Earls said. It's unfortunate that this could lead the reader to believe the Chamber is associated with this, and also highly possible that was the intention all along. I have contacted the local person on the state's PAC registry for clarification, but no response yet. End quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 12th, 2024. Religion. Near-death experiences to be taken seriously. Reverends Hutto and McQuistion say some visions of heaven with lost loved ones are real. By Bob Campbell. The stories usually have a lot in common. A person suffers a catastrophic injury or a grave illness and is near death when he or she finds themselves going through a long, dark tunnel with a bright light at the end. They come to find themselves in a place suffused with overwhelming love, see angels, meet loved ones who have died, and sometimes even meet Jesus Christ and God. They are in heaven, and after a short while, they come back to life on earth, healing with their profound experience, having permanently changed them. Before entering the tunnel, some report being elevated above an accident scene or a hospital gurney, seeing themselves lying unconscious and hearing people say things that they later astonish the people with by telling what they heard. The stories of are of what's known as near-death experiences. And the Reverends Bill Hutto and Mark McQuistion say some are probably legitimate. I've got no way of proving it other than people's testimony that something happened that spiritually tested them, said the Reverend Hutto, pastor of Sunset Heights Baptist Church. I would think it would change them. Sometimes I think God uses those as a wake-up call to get people off the fence and get serious about their relationship with Him. I can't see any other reason for it. However, Hutto said having such an experience doesn't necessarily mean the person will be redeemed. They still have to make a choice to come to know the Lord, he said. The Bible says the proof will be borne out in the life. He said the adage that God works in mysterious ways is well-founded. I think some of the stories are real and some probably aren't, Hutto said. Too many people are trying to get brownie points with God by knocking on doors or feeding the homeless. Works are important, but our relationship with God is built on faith alone in Christ. That's why we do the works. The Reverend McQuistion, pastor of the First Church of Nazarene, has not had a classic near-death experience, but he experienced the pure love of God early this year when his sister-in-law called from Fort Dodge, Iowa at 4:15 a.m. and said she had been inspired in a dream to impart Psalm 118, verse 17 to him to assure him that his stage 4 stomach cancer would not be fatal. The psalm says, I will not die but live and will proclaim what the Lord has done. I think some of the stories are legitimate, McQuistion said. I wouldn't believe them all because the devil is a liar and he could easily create things like that. Why do they happen? Because God wants to warn people that they will not live forever, and the choices they make here on earth will have eternal consequences. I think some are shown that if they died now, they would not go to heaven. They are shown the torments of hell, like a warning shot across the bow. Citing Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25, he said, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of destruction. Hell has every kind of suffering you can imagine. It was created for the devil, whose name is Lucifer, who was the worship leader in heaven. He said, I want to be God, and this place was created for him and those who choose to follow him. Ephesians 6:12 says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. If you reject God and choose your own selfish ways, that's what Satan is all about. You become part of his crowd. Ask God to forgive you, make him the boss, and do what pleases him by living a life that honors him. Church gives back following social media attack from Connection Christian Church. Last week, a political group supporting some incumbents in our local city council elections published hateful and untrue things about Connection Christian Church as a tactic to gain political traction. We, as leaders at Connection, are saddened by attacking churches for political gain, and more so for the hurt that this type of disingenuous rhetoric causes. Despite the lies, they did get two things right about our church. One, we really do work to be a positive presence here in our community. partnering with local charities and nonprofits and other faith communities in acts of service. And two, we do welcome all of God's people to come to the Lord's table together when we worship. It is a founding principle of who we are. We firmly believe that the unity of Christ's body and God's amazing grace means all of us who seek to follow Jesus can worship together, even when our beliefs differ individually. So we are a diverse congregation, embodying diverse theological perspectives, political party affiliations, views on abortion, sexual orientations, and even sports team affiliations. For 118 years, our congregation has prayed and worked to be a blessing to our community, to all of the people of our community. But because what some intended for harm, God intended for good, we will be donating $954, $1 on behalf of each person who reacted to, commented on, or shared that cruel post as of today to the West Texas Crisis Center in honor of October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Whether their interaction was negative or championing Christ's hospitality and love, we value each one as a child of God. This month especially, may those of us in positions of authority, in the home, in government buildings, with large online audiences, be aware of how our words affect the most vulnerable among us. Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, pastor, Reverend Dr. Joe Weeks, pastor, Joni Hires, church moderator, Susan Paddock, outreach chair from Connection Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. The dynamic relationship between love and prayer, by William F. Holland, Jr., Ph.D., ordained and licensed Christian minister. On a recent Sunday, I was asked to bring the morning sermon for a wonderful church in the country called Mount Lebanon Methodist. I had a dream recently about delivering a message, and when I awoke, I went into my office and asked God to please not let it dissipate before I could write down as much of it as I could remember. Dreams are like the morning fog that fades when the sun comes out. I was noticeably rattled and was typing feverishly. How many know when God gives you a word, it's not a suggestion? I ended up separating the content into four parts, and here is one of the sections. Within the dream, even though I was the one speaking, it was a warning of serious discipline to me. I talk a lot about love and prayer, but I seldom consider that I cannot have one without the other. Sadly, more often than not, I do not have either one. I'm being bluntly honest about my lack of fervency when it comes to caring and intercession. I comprehend that compassion and having a burden to pray is measured by how filled I am with God's Spirit. I will not pray if I do not love, and without love, I will not pray. Do you see how these two important aspects of the Christian life work together, and both are driven by faith? Why did Jesus pray so much? Because he was filled with love. The sobering question here is, how do we feel about our responsibility to love and pray? Do I want to develop a passionate burden to love more and to pray more? Or am I satisfied to just keep going the way that I am? In the dream, I was told the way to have more love is to pray and ask for it. I shouldn't be surprised. Having a deep conviction and concern for others does not just fall on my head. Yes, the nature and character of Christ lives in me, but this does not automatically transform my conscience or renew my mind. I've been given the demand and responsibility to close myself in with God each day and pray. And then the result of developing my relationship with Him and drawing closer to Him will be to be like Him. What is important to Him will now become my burdens, which causes these priorities to become so strong they will drive me to my knees. This sounds wonderful, but to be honest, it does not happen as much as it should. I'm often so busy with my own thoughts, I'm not considering what He wants me to do. I fill my day up with distractions and end up not asking for more sensitivity and love. And guess what? This leaves me without a burning desire to pray. You see, when we have an understanding of our accountability to be His servant, we no longer have an excuse as to why we fail to obey. The bottom line is that evidently I do not care like I should. Where is my reverential fear of God? How many times have I read the passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 13? And yet I keep thinking it's talking about someone else. Let's read it again. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I have nothing. I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. I'm not exactly sure what being nothing and having nothing means spiritually, but I know it's not good. Here I see what is required of me, and yet I am rebellious against it. Why? Because I would rather be absorbed and conformed to the world. Disobedience is a sin, and instead of being an overcomer for Christ, I'm being overwhelmed with my own carnality. What I fail to be convicted about is that I cannot blame my failure to live for Jesus on anyone else, even the devil. I have free will to choose whatever I want to do, and I will be the one who will answer for it. Read more about the Christian life at billyhollandministries.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.